Good morning, and thanks for joining us here on the Ideas Network. For the next hour, we're talking about money, personal finance in this COVID-19 pandemic. Saving money is often a deliberate move. We prioritize the long-term stability of keeping some dollars in reserve, and we opt out of fun new gadgets or expensive trips because you never know what's coming because of what's happening right now. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and this is The Morning Show. Maybe you've got an emergency fund in the bank. It's time to figure out when to tap into it and how to stretch those savings. 1-800-642-1234 is our number. You can join this conversation. Have you been experiencing a financial pinch in this coronavirus pandemic? What is your situation like when it comes to money? What questions do you have about what to expect from the government stimulus package or what this tax season has in store? 800-642-1234. We're going to answer some of those questions with Chelsea Brennan. She's a certified financial education instructor and writer of the blog Smart Money Mamas, Money Talk for Moms by Moms. Chelsea, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me, Keely.
Let's dig in right away with kind of that middle ground. When you have some savings, people might be thinking about dipping into their emergency funds right now. How much should we try to have in an account like that?
So generally, the recommendation is somewhere from 3 to 6 months, right? But this is a big stretch for a lot of people, and you might have $1,000 or $2,000 in your emergency fund. I think the first step in a crisis like this is let's get back to your budget. Let's take a look at where can you cut? What expenses do you normally make room for that you don't have to right now if you're doing self-quarantine or social distancing? And how much could you really make that stretch? And one way we talk about that in our community is a ramen budget. So go back to college when you were eating ramen noodles and spending as little as possible. Let's go through your budget from that bare bones perspective. What expenses absolutely need to happen? And then only add back ones that either are truly good for your mental health or your physical health and give you kind of that baseline and figure out how far you can stretch that emergency fund. I think that's always step one.
So when you talk about a ramen budget, you're not saying, yes, invest in these, high sodium, small packets of noodles. You're saying go down to the basics and then add that stuff back in, like you want your kids to eat fruits and vegetables, shop for the sale, that sort of thing.
Exactly. So we are not recommending that you only eat unhealthy yes. foods or that you don't do anything for your mental health. And we're not recommending that you live on this budget forever. I think there's some, financial education that would recommend that you kind of cut absolutely everything that's not a necessity and dump it in an emergency fund or save for retirement. And those are amazing goals. But we all have to live and we all have to be generally happy people. So we use this as more of a baseline of like, let's know how much room you actually have, because we find a lot of people, especially that are in that middle ground, that do have some savings, that have been able to shift their jobs to work at home. They still have some income coming in, feel like their back's against the wall a little bit and that they don't have any options. And sometimes just doing this exercise of discovering what your bare bones is shows you how much room you have in your budget to move things if you really had to.
Let's talk a little bit more about food, though, because there has to be a strategy here. I mean, and it's not the strategy of go to the big, bulk store and buy 10, 20-pound bags of potatoes. There's a better way than the panic buying when it comes to making sure that you have enough food and good food to feed your household.
Absolutely. So the first thing you should do on food is go through your pantry and your freezer. And almost every family, especially if you're in that middle road, has at least $100 of food stored somewhere, right? It's other, packaged mixes you've bought for cornbread and whatever else you have in your house, soups. You've got frozen meats, frozen veggies. Know what you have first. And this is actually a good opportunity, I think, as we do food planning, to really draw down on what you already have. I think sometimes we convince ourselves we just have no food in the house. So use that kind of store that you've naturally built up, and then take your pantry list and really make a meal plan. And I know people hate meal planning, and it feels restrictive and we're generally bad at it, but start with saying like, okay, what's a meal that I really like that I can make in bulk and maybe we could eat over a couple of days, right? Have a general sense of what you could eat and go to the grocery store with that plan. So try to spread out. I would do 2 weeks of planning. You can freeze things. I definitely like lean on shelf stable and and frozen foods. I know that we all love fresh fruits and veggies, but for my boys, I think they would eat us out of house and home if we bought them enough fresh blueberries to actually sustain them. And it's much cheaper to buy a big bag of frozen blueberries, and they actually think that's like a dessert, right, to eat frozen blueberries. So find that mix and really use that meal plan. And for us, a big support in the meal planning is that we write it on the kitchen fridge, right? Like literally write on the kitchen fridge so that we know what's coming up. We don't get confused. And we actually have a basket that is ingredients for upcoming meals. And so what we hear from parents all the time is, okay, I created a meal plan, but then my 12-year-old went and ate three of the ingredients that I needed for dinner, and now I have to go back to the grocery store. And in this environment, we don't want to be going back to the grocery store. We want to be social distancing as best possible. So have a separate basket that is, this is ingredients for meals. And you guys can't eat snacks out of here. This is our ingredients for meals. And make sure that that's kind of protected and that the snacks are separated out. But this is a really good time to practice some meal planning. And even using a tool like Supercook, which is a website that you can go in and enter the ingredients you currently have in your house, and it'll recommend recipes that use the ingredients you have on hand.
We're talking with Chelsea Brennan, who's a certified financial education instructor, and she's here to answer our questions about money as we navigate this pandemic. And there's room for you in this discussion at 800-642-1234. Have you been laid off or had your work hours reduced because of the pandemic? How are you making ends meet? What advice do you have for other people, or what questions do you have as your family is trying to save money right now? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is the email address we have. Chelsea, we've got a lot of discussion about Congress passing this coronavirus emergency relief package last week, and part of it gives some Americans paid leave that haven't had it before. What does this cover? What are the terms? Help break it down for us.
Absolutely. So the Paid Leave Act and the stimulus gives up to 12 weeks of family leave to anyone who's affected by the coronavirus. So this is actually really important. If you get sick or you have a family member that gets sick, so this is not normal, you know, sick leave, which also got a passed. But if you have a family member that you need to care for, or your kids are out of school and daycare centers are closed and you need to be home with them, you can get up to 12 weeks of paid leave. And the way this works is that it's for companies that have fewer than 500 employees, so you would know whether your company is eligible. You have to have worked in that job for at least 30 to 60 days before the initial, you know, layoff, if this is related to layoff. And then your company actually pays this. So your employer is going to pay up to a maximum of $1,000 a week or $200 a day. And the way it works is the employer will cut the check and then they will be reimbursed by the federal government. So there shouldn't be anything else that you have to apply for. You have to check in with your company's HR department of how they're rolling this out and where it's ready to go. But you should have up to 12 weeks of paid family leave.
And is that just for full-time employees?
No. So part-time employees can also get coverage under this. Obviously, it's going to depend on what your average weekly take-home is and that coverage, but they are also eligible.
And really quickly, the federal and state governments, they're giving some tax relief this season as far as when you have to file, right?
Yes. So filing has been pushed out, I believe, until October 15th. And so you have more time. So if you haven't filed 2019 yet, you can wait up that long if you want to. The one thing to keep in mind is that stimulus checks this year are based on 2019 filing if you have already filed and 2018 if you haven't filed yet. So if your income is lower, was lower in 2019 and might make you eligible for those stimulus checks, filing as soon as possible in the next couple of weeks might help you get that stimulus check instead of a lower amount.
Excellent. Thank you for that update. That's Chelsea Brennan, who teaches people how to handle money. She's helping us understand how to scrape and save and invest when the financial markets are down and income is uncertain. There's room for you in this discussion at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what to expect in these coming months? How are you strategizing with the money that you have? And are you a little bit unclear as to whether that money is still going to keep coming in? Share your story with us at 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We know people are out of work. Last week, the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development received more than 1.5 million calls from people filing for unemployment. It even overloaded the system. And when paychecks don't come in, we have to make decisions about what we can go without, which bills we can actually cover, and what we can't pay. We're talking personal finance here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and we'd like to hear from you. 800-642-1234. Have you filed for unemployment insurance? Tell us about the process. Did you lose your job because places are shutting down for public safety? How are you figuring out how to make ends meet? Email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Chelsea Brennan is a certified financial education instructor, and we're talking about all things personal finance right now. And let's pick up that conversation about the government checks that are coming to, lots of Americans under the government's $2 trillion relief bill. There are many adults that will get $1,200. People with kids of a certain age or younger will get an additional amount. For people without an emergency fund, once that money gets to us, how should we use it? What should we be thinking about?
So I think the first thing you should be thinking about, Keely, is what do you need to cover, which is exactly what we just said, right? What bills can't you afford? And a $1,200 payment or even $2,400 for the average couple, this is not necessarily going to stretch a month of emergency fund, right? We talked about that 3 to 6 month baseline. So instead,
because it sounds like a lot of money, but when you start paying things, it's not as much as it seems.
No, it adds up super fast. So we want to make sure that our core needs are first covered. So what is it going to cost to stay in your home, to make sure that you're fed and that you're safe and your utilities are on, right? So before these checks even come, I think the first thing we need to do is make calls and figure out where we can get some relief. So in the stimulus bill, we also have mortgage relief, right? So federal mortgages are giving up to 6 months of relief. You have to request it. This is not like student loan forbearance, which is automatic, but you can get 6 months of relief on your mortgage payments. And that might give you some more space, make this money stretch a little bit farther. You can call your student loan. If you have federal student loans, will automatically payments will be paused and interest will not accrue over that 6 month time period for the student loans. So find some space. And credit card companies are another one that are doing this. And the wait times on those phone calls are long. You're better off calling, if that you have a company that's doing 24 hours kind of in the middle of the night trying to time that wait list. But figure out where you can get a little bit of relief, figure out what you can cancel, and then prioritize how to use that $1,200 or $2,400, depending on whether you're single or married, to stretch it as far as possible on the essentials.
You're running the numbers and helping us move things around, but there's an emotional piece to this. We are strong, hardy, up by your bootstraps, Midwestern folk here. And to say, call your credit card company and say, hey, can I get some relief here? I can't pay my bill. That's sometimes hard to swallow for people. How do we resolve that?
Yeah, that's a great point. And money is so emotional. And I understand the up by your bootstraps tight mindset as well. But we have to understand that money is tied to everything that we do in our lives. And whether we want to think it's this black and white dollars and cents thing, it is tied to our sense of safety, right? So for a lot of people right now, regardless of making that call, we're feeling some of our old money shame, our negative thoughts about money really come to the surface, whether that is coming through as berating ourselves for not building an emergency fund 6 months ago, whether it's berating ourselves for not asking for that promotion so maybe we could have been making some more money, or feeling like we can never get ahead, right? These thoughts come up. And I think the first thing that they can do, and I know this is going to feel a little woo-woo to some people, but really to just ground. So take a minute, take a quiet minute, take a deep breath, let yourself think whatever you're thinking about money in this moment. If you're feeling out of control, if you're feeling at risk, let it come to the surface and then ask yourself, are those thoughts, are your initial knee-jerk reactions serving you? And I think that when we're having these negative feelings, we get angry because we don't want to feel that way, right? And we want to push back. And so we don't do the things that can help us in those situations. So ask yourself, is this frustration, is this, I'm just going to handle it on my own, keeping my family as safe as possible? Is it giving me the options? Is getting in a screaming match with my landlord about rent actually serving both of us and making sure we can move forward? So then ask the questions of what, okay, what can I do right now? And making that phone call, you don't have to not make payments. So if you call and get relief on whether it's your credit card or your mortgage, and you have the ability to pay and you end up feeling like you have the emergency fund, you can still pay. And that's great and that's fine. But we don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 to 8 weeks, right? Your job that feels very stable right now might cut your hours. You might get sick. And so the most important thing right now is how do you take care of yourself and those people around you? And make sure that even if it's just one small step at a time. And I think if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you don't want to do this, if this is against kind of what your core normal nature would be, teeny tiny steps, right? So break it down of like, okay, I'm just going to Google the names of my credit cards and see if they're even offering relief. I'm not going to commit to making the phone call. I'm just going to put the credit card name into Google with the name coronavirus and see what pops up, and then I'll decide, right? So just start making small moves forward. A lot of us are being forced to do things that are out of our normal comfort zone, but we have to protect our families and our own safety first.
We'll dig into some of those options once we've kind of pushed past and taken those baby steps in a moment. We're talking with Chelsea Brennan this morning. She's writer of the blog Smart Money Mamas. And you're part of this conversation at 1-800-642-1234. How are you managing debts like student loans or a mortgage or medical bills? Did you have to take your kids out of daycare after there was a limit on staff, or did you do it for public safety? And how are you handling that? Maybe you still have to pay. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. When we've taken those baby steps, Chelsea, and we decide, you know what, this is an option for me, let's start with student loans. Maybe student loans are hitting people hard right now. Is there a way to hit pause on those? I know they're pretty relentless.
Yeah, so there actually is a way to hit pause, and it's automatic if you have any federal loans. And what that means is there no payments are being required. Interest is being dropped to zero until September 30th, which means that no interest is going to accrue over the six-month period. And for those that are worried about student loan forgiveness and public service loans, so those people need to make 120 payments before their loans can be forgiven, these months will count as payments. So you won't be making payments, but it's still going to count towards your student loan forgiveness program. So you don't have to worry about if you're in one of those programs, not paying over the next 6 months is going to hurt you. You're actually still going to get those months counted. So that'll happen automatically. What is a little less clear is if you have federal student loans, whether automatic payments will be shut off. So if you're someone who's on auto pay for your student loans, go in there and at least just manually turn it off. Make sure that you know that that money's not going to come out, even though there's no payment due. But yeah, that's automatic. Private student loans are not caught under this program. So if you've refinanced your student loans into another program, if you took out private student loans when you were in school, they are not required to pause for 6 months. And that's going to be more a case-by-case basis of what they're offering due to coronavirus. And you're going to have to call your specific lender to see what that is.
What about when it comes to mortgages? Can people find relief there? I mean, of course, if you can pay, pay.
Yeah. So federally backed mortgages, once again, so they can't make statements around private loans. But any loans that are under Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, you can get 6 months of forbearance due to financial hardship. Now, these are a little bit different than student loans. Student loans were automatic. For mortgages, you have to call and request relief. And when you do that, make sure you're mentioning that you are facing financial difficulty due to coronavirus, or that you expect to face financial difficulty due to coronavirus, and you can get a forbearance for up to 6 months. Now, the other difference with student loans is that interest is still going to accrue on your mortgage over those 6 months. You won't owe any principal, but you will see that this interest balance creeps up over the 6 months. Now, if your rates are relatively low, rates have been low for the last decade, this is not going to be a huge amount of interest that's going to add up. But you should just be aware that when you come start paying payments again in 6 months, you're going to pay that interest first. Now, the one other thing I want to mention here is for renters. So renters are getting some eviction protection if they live in a single or multifamily home, or they rent a multifamily home that is backed by a federal mortgage. So landlords whose homes are financed by federal mortgages cannot evict tenants, charge late fees or penalties, or charge fees for late rent payments over this six-month period. So you do have a little bit of protection there as well.
And there are a couple of people out there, more than a couple, I think, who have their eye on those low, low, low interest rates and going, maybe I should refinance then if I have the ability. Is this a good time?
Yeah, so I think we all see that Fed announced the 0% interest rate, and we think like this is a great time to refinance. That Fed interest rate is not directly mortgage rates, right? And that's more dependent on where mortgage securities are trading in the open market, and that's a whole complicated thing. But when we see volatility and we see people selling off risk, those rates can actually go up. So what you're seeing right now, if you go to a loan provider and ask them to refinance your mortgage, that rate could change drastically day to day. And sometimes rates are actually much higher than they were a couple of weeks ago. Sometimes they're a little bit lower. And so I would either wait, especially if you're not sure if you're going to be in your home for at least 10 years, right? You want to make sure that you're going to get the benefit of paying to refinance. But either ask if you can watch the rates day to day and lock in when you see something that's good, or I would wait a few months and let things settle out a little bit. I think we'll also see some slowdown in banks wanting to offer mortgages because those volatile rates make it hard for them to know whether they can get that risk off their balance sheet. They sell those into the open market. So it's not the perfect time. I think if you want to try to play the game, you can, but you're better off waiting a couple of months.
All right. Chelsea Brennan joins us this hour as we explore how to handle our money during the COVID-19 outbreak. The new coronavirus has public health officials advising people to stay home as much as possible, and that means money can be tight. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the conversation. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Keeley Boltina, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Our economic climate is changing thanks to measures we're taking to stem the spread of COVID-19. And we've talked about some tips for stretching your money here on The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Erger-Kent. Maybe your finances are sound right now. Maybe you're looking for an investment. What do you want to know about navigating the stock market? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about your retirement fund? What questions do you have about managing it? There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. And we have Rick from Ladysmith who has a question for us this morning. Good morning, Rick. All right, we'll keep going with that in just a moment then. Let's see if Patrick from Wisconsin Dells can join us now. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
Hey there. What's your question?
A simple one. I think it was earlier stated that the amount of the checks will be determined by using either 2018 or 2019 tax returns. I haven't filed my 2019 yet. I make a little bit less for 2019 than 18. Is it too late for me to get my 2019 taxes done in time for those to be used for the assessment, or is it just too late and they're going to just use the 18? Is there still time?
Thanks for that question, Patrick. Chelsea Brennan, you're a certified financial education instructor. What do you think of Patrick's question, his situation?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think this is an unprecedented time. They're trying to get checks out in the next 3 weeks. I think if you could get your filings in digitally within the next week or so, you will probably qualify. The question is whether it's worth it. So as long as you're if you're a single individual, as long as your adjusted gross income, so that's after discounts from any retirement savings or things, are under $75,000, or if you're a married couple, under $150,000, you're going to get the full check either way. If you're somewhere on that line, it phases out after that point, but you don't lose the entire check. So just figure out whether if the rush is worth the difference. But I think if you get it in the next week or so, it might help, but there's not entire clarity on that yet.
Okay, so if it's relatively easy, if it's not too much work, if you have the documents and can file, go ahead and do it, Patrick. That's what I'm hearing, Chelsea.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, sounds great. And we do have Rick from Ladysmith now. Let's try it. Rick, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, good to hear from you. What question do you have for Chelsea this morning?
Kind of a multi-tiered question, I guess. It's regarding the mortgage relief. Now, is that something that mortgage companies will be required to do? Like, say, I ask for a little bit of mortgage relief for the next couple, 3 months. Can I be turned down for that, or is that something under the stimulus package that they would have to do Is it based on creditworthiness? Is interest going to accrue during that time? Things of that nature, will they penalties be assessed?
All right. Yeah, that's a good question, Rick. So, Chelsea, wondering about the variables when it comes to maybe some mortgage relief and whether companies have to offer mortgage relief in this time.
Absolutely. That's a great question, Rick. So if you have a federally owned mortgage, which even if you went through your local bank and got your mortgage, they often sell those into the market and they get bought by the Fannie Mae's and Freddie Mac. So you're going to have to ask who currently owns your mortgage. If it is owned by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, yes, they will have to give mortgage relief. You have to call and request it. You have to say that you have financial difficulty due to coronavirus. There's not really clarity on what documentation you will use. And they intentionally left some gray area so that just by saying I'm having financial difficulty due to coronavirus, they should immediately give you that relief. Privately owned mortgages, which are still fairly few and far between depending on your lender, are not required, but many of them are giving some kind of relief. So you're going to have to call and ask. But that's if you have a federal mortgage, yes, you can get relief. On your other questions, no late payments, no extra fees can be charged during that 6-month period if you have a federal loan. Interest will accrue. So when you go to pay your first payment, when the 6 months is up, you will see a higher percentage of that being interest than what your principal would normally be because you're going to have to pay the interest that accrued. Your payment will be the same, but more of it's going to go to interest than principal, but no other late fees will come up, and it's not going to be based on creditworthiness. It will be if anyone who has financial difficulty due to coronavirus will be able to get this relief.
All right, Rick, thanks for giving us a call at 800-642-1234. We are open to questions with Chelsea Brennan, Certified Financial Education Instructor, and we're talking about all things from trying to get by paycheck to paycheck to how to stretch your savings to retirement and also other investments. And I do want to ask, kind of like when we were talking about how low interest rates are, there's that old adage, the buy low, sell high. And I wonder what your take is on that when it comes to people looking at the stock market right now and thinking, wow, I could really get in on something.
Yeah, so that comes up every cycle. We get that question of like, is now the time to dump all my cash in? And I think the first thing is that human beings are terrible at timing the market. Like we all think that we've like got it figured out and we can
We're
smarter than that. We're not. So if you have some extra cash on hand, dumping it all into the market all at one point is not my recommendation. What I would say right now is 100% first thing, make sure your cash on hand is shored up. Make sure you have a 3 to 6 month emergency fund. That should be priority number one. We mentioned earlier in the show that we don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 to 8 weeks. Maybe things feel really stable for you now and they won't in the upcoming. So that's why we always plan emergency funds because we don't know what's coming. So first things first, shore up your cash. If once you're shored up, you still feel like you have some room in your budget to invest, that's amazing. I would increase your regular contributions, right? So if you contribute to a 401k and you want to increase your paycheck contributions by 1% or 2%, or you have a Roth IRA that you fund on your own and you want to increase your contributions $100, $200 a month, that's amazing. But let's do it consistently and not dump it in all at once, because you might end up feeling like you got screwed or things didn't work out if the market falls another 10% next month and you already put all your cash in this month, right? We don't know where the bottom is. Nobody does. If you see people on the internet saying that this is the bottom or it's going to shoot back up, they don't know. So consistency and being a steady investor is really the way to long-term investing success. And it's not the sexiest way. It's not the most exciting way, but it is the way to make sure that you get the long-term returns you want.
Yeah, it sounds like in these times of uncertainty, people are looking for certainty. And so saving money is one way. We've also heard of people, though, wanting to sell assets to buy things like gold and silver over fears of market turmoil because they feel like gold and silver are a certain value. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so this is an interesting phenomenon as well that comes up in every recession. There's actually an article in the Wall Street Journal this weekend about the fact that physical gold reserves are way down. People are scrambling to try to get physical gold. And the interesting thing is gold is no different than money. So we talk about money and people being upset that it's no longer a gold standard, right, and backed by a physical asset and that it's just based on what we think money is worth. But it's the same with gold. Gold has no real functional value in the world, right? We only place value on it because we think it's pretty and we like it and we feel like it's a scarce resource. So I wouldn't recommend that strategy. One, if you're going to sell assets to buy gold, you're locking in losses. And really the only way to lose money in a downturn from an investment perspective is to sell and guarantee that loss, right? So if you bought we're going to imagine that you're buying an individual stock, but you've bought a stock at $10, you watched it grow over a couple years to 15, and now it fell to $5, and you sell, you're only getting $5 a share, but you still owned the same number of shares before. So let's say I'm making this way more complicated than it needs to be, but you invested $100 at $10, so you have 10 shares. You sell all 10 shares at $5 and you get $50 back, right? If you wait till it goes back up to 10, you can now only buy 5 shares. So you actually own less of the asset that you wanted if you sell when it's down. You've locked in that loss. You've lost 5 shares. And so we think you absolutely should stay invested if you can. If you do not need that cash for actual living expenses, stay invested. The other side is, what would you do with the gold? Like, what's the – if there was a true crisis, and this came up in our audience of like, okay, what if the stock market completely goes away, cash, you see hyperinflation, cash isn't worth any money – well, who would want your gold? Like, what function? Why would someone trade you something valuable like food or shelter for an asset that doesn't do anything? So this is something that I think we all get a little panicked about. We view gold as having this real value, but it's not actually there.
Yeah, it's just kind of shiny at that point. Let's go to Marky in Arkansas, Wisconsin. Good morning, Marky.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question this morning?
I have a question. Does this stimulus package include retired folks? Because our medication costs continue to go up, as well as the food that we have to buy at the grocery store. So do we get in on this $1,200 a month, this $1,200 stimulus package?
All right. That's a good question, Marky. Chelsea, what about people who are retired and getting some sort of retirement income or Social Security?
Absolutely. So if you make enough to file taxes, yes, you're absolutely included. We did add a provision in the final bill where if you receive Social Security or retirement disability benefits but earn too little to file returns, you're also going to receive stimulus checks, and it's going to be based on the information you sent to the IRS either in 2018 or 2019 on your 1099 form, which is your Social Security 1099 form or your retirement benefit 1099 form. So you will be eligible. The only reason you would not be eligible is if you are claimed as a dependent on someone else's taxes. So if you live with a child that claims you as a dependent and you don't have sufficient income, then you would not be included. But most retirees will be included.
Okay, yeah. And if your retirement is well above the income threshold, you're very fortunate, and that would take you out of this running for this money too.
Absolutely, that would also take you out.
All right. Sounds good. We are exploring all aspects of managing our money in this time of uncertainty with Chelsea Brennan. She sticks with us now. She's a blogger. She's also a certified financial education instructor, previously worked on Wall Street as a financial analyst. And we're taking your questions. What do you want to know about how to navigate your financial situation right now? Are you thinking about your retirement fund, or are you just trying to figure out how to manage the debts that you have now, like student loans, or a mortgage, or paying your everyday bills? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. We can think about it together. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. The conversation continues ahead on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about personal finance here on The Morning Show. Whether you're living paycheck to paycheck, or you have some savings in the bank, or you're trying to make some good financial investments now, this conversation is for you. I'm Keely Boltina. Our guest is Chelsea Brennan, who teaches people how to work with their money. And we got an email from Jackie saying she's over 65 years old, is not covered by Medicare until May. She's heard that it could cost something like $20,000 if you need to be hospitalized for COVID-19. Jackie says she's got very little savings, and she's wondering if we know of any exceptions in the healthcare system for this sort of a circumstance. Chelsea, what could Jackie be thinking about right now?
So I'm not super familiar with the healthcare relief it offered in this bill, or if there is any. I think most cases, if your income is low, you should be able to get a special allowance to be added to Medicare or Medicaid early. And in that case, I would call your state exchange and explain. They are trying to get especially people who have been laid off and unemployed on care as quickly as possible. But this is going to depend on a little bit on your state and on your income level. So unfortunately, I don't have an exact answer for you at this point.
But it sounds like it's kind of fair game in all of our scenarios here to ask some questions right now.
Absolutely. Always call and ask a question. I think that we are trying to get as many people on Medicare and with the care they need as soon as possible. So definitely make a call and ask a question.
And we also had Mike from Stoughton who called, says he's paying for his daughter's student loan through Sallie Mae and just wants to clarify how long he can postpone that loan. What's the latest on that?
So it's 6 months. You have 6 months of relief from the time the bill was signed. Some of that is still flowing through the system. You might not see it on your digital dashboard yet, but some companies have actually already adjusted. But it's 6 months from the date the bill was signed.
Okay, so up to 6 months. You could postpone it for less if you could pay for it.
Yeah, so you actually – so the postponement on student loans is automatic. So you can make payments if you would like to, but you're going to elect to do that sooner. And in that case, you're going to pay any interest accrued first, and then any extra payments are straight to principal. So for people who can, paying through this 0% time can actually help you pay a little bit more principal than you would have otherwise.
Okay, sounds good. And then Megan from Baraboo is on the line with a question now. Hi, Megan.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what are you wondering?
My question is, I was wondering if an employee is temporarily laid off with a stay-at-home order, and specifically this employee is a county government employee. I'm wondering if or what happens with their health insurance coverage, if they would have to be paying COBRA to continue or if the employer would continue their contributions.
Okay, thanks for the question, Megan. Chelsea, any insight into how insurance works when people are temporarily laid off right now?
Yeah, so when you're temporarily laid off or furloughed, normally you either have to go to COBRA or you can apply on your state exchange for a special opening to either get on Medicare or your own policy. In this case, we are seeing different employers deal with this in different ways. So there are some companies that are making layoffs that are agreeing to continue to pay benefits even while employees are temporarily furloughed. So this is once again going to be a case-by-case basis. But I would make sure you ask ask good questions as you're going through this process. Who will cover? When will COBRA start? If you need to rely on COBRA, and what options do you have? The one thing to remember is that furloughed employees can still apply for unemployment, and we are going to see that unemployment boost of $600 a week from the stimulus bill. So you do have that option even if you're just temporarily laid off through the furlough.
Chelsea, less than a minute left. If we take nothing else away from this, how do you want us to think about money?
I want you to think about money in the calmest way possible. And I know that's really hard to do in this environment, but you have a lot of options. There are ways to go out and make more money even from home. We're in a digital age where there's a ton of options. Try not to get into the headspace of I'm completely stuck and there's nothing I can do. Let yourself be open to the things. Ask questions. Be willing to get out of your comfort zone a little bit on that side. And we will get through this. This will end and we'll be able to pick up on our normal lives as much as possible.
Chelsea, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Chelsea Brennan is a certified financial education instructor and writer of the blog Smart Money Mamas, Money Talk for Moms by Moms. She previously worked on Wall Street as a financial analyst, and we've been talking about personal finance amid the new coronavirus pandemic. Last month, before social isolation changed the way campaigns operate in Wisconsin, people were going door to door trying to turn out the vote. And not only now, but for the November election. That was especially true in Milwaukee's African American neighborhoods, where many voters stayed home in 2016. Those voters could be crucial to winning Wisconsin this year. Corrine Hess has this report.
It's a recent morning at Rise and Grind Cafe in Milwaukee's Bronzeville neighborhood. Soft rock hits from the 1980s are playing on the radio. And the coffee shop's regulars are enjoying breakfast. Corey Strong does odd jobs at the cafe. Born and raised in Milwaukee, Strong was a college history major and loves sharing odd facts about the city's first mayors and local politics. Strong was a political junkie for a long time, voting twice for President Barack Obama. Disinterest kept him from voting in 2016, but Strong says he's interested now.
I disagree with the president we got in so much that I want to see a change. So if that means voting for a Democrat or a person with ideas that's similar to mine, but not so much mine, but far left of what right is, I would do that.
Wisconsin's voter turnout in 2016 was the lowest it had been for a presidential election in nearly 20 years, and African-American wards reported some of the biggest declines. Democrats have vowed to focus on Milwaukee turnout this year, but Republicans are also making overt appeals to Wisconsin's African-American voters. In February, the Republican Party of Wisconsin opened its first field office in Bronzeville, a predominantly black neighborhood just north of downtown Milwaukee. Within 2 weeks, the office was vandalized. Just 5 blocks away at Rise and Grind, Strong and others questioned the motive of the GOP's office location.
I think that's a bad location. That's Bronzeville. That's a very... My grandparents moved up here in 1949 from Memphis, Tennessee.
Latrina Highwater is the owner of Rise and Grind. She says the fact that the GOP opened an office in this neighborhood lets her know that African Americans have power in this election.
The fact that they have it on King Drive, where I'm sure they know a lot of people are Democrats and they don't have our support, but that's a pretty bold move.
Mark Jefferson heads the Wisconsin GOP. He knows the party has done a poor job of reaching out to minorities, particularly African Americans.
I don't sit here and say we're going to necessarily win in the city of Milwaukee this time around, but if we get more votes out of that area than we have in the past, we will be making improvements that are going to be needed to win this state.
The state Democratic Party says it's been organizing in Milwaukee since after the 2016 election. And another Democratic group, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, has also been on the ground. Rick Banks is the political director for BLOC. He says getting people to believe their voice matters has been difficult.
People feeling like they didn't have power and that no matter who they vote for, things aren't going to change. So for us, we changed that to say, like, the power rests with us, and like, we have to fight for and hold the people accountable for the things that that we want to see.
Despite all of the efforts of both Democrats and Republicans, there are still some people who don't believe their vote matters. Cartier Scott is a black man living in Milwaukee. He says he votes in every local election, but after voting for Obama in 2008, he has not voted for president. In November 2012, Scott drove to his polling place and former elementary school, Bruce Elementary, on Milwaukee's northwest side.
Yeah, I remember sitting in there and I was like, do I really want to vote? Yeah, I want to vote, but it's like, okay, I'm going to vote. Like, does my vote really count? Like, I was kind of, you know, in that realm.
Scott says he sat in the car for about 15 minutes, and then he drove off. He's not sure if he'll vote in this election. He'll decide closer to November. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This story is part of WPR's Swing State series. To read more, go to WPR.org/swingstate. And while you're at our website, you can also sign up for daily newsletters and get the top stories we're following each day. And as the impact of COVID-19 grows in Wisconsin, WPR brings you coverage of the latest developments from our reporters all around the state. We've also added additional state news updates throughout the day each weekday. You can hear them right after NPR news at the top of each hour. You can find the latest news and related stories at our website. Specific to COVID, go to WPR.org/COVID. Up next, U.S. Congressman Mike Gallagher, then Wisconsin State Superintendent of Public Education, Carolyn Stanford Taylor. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.